Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, I'm glad you did. Jonathan Zook is with us. He's the president of the Association for Competitive Technology and one of our top Brain Trust members. He's been with us for a long time, and he's just back from across the pond. He's been over in Europe recently working on some projects, and we've asked him to join us today to talk to us about those things. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Well, speaking of negotiations, all my skills were put to the test over there. I mean, I think I needed to buy the Begin With No book and follow it up with the Getting to Yes book, and then finally read the sequel, Well, We Tried, or something like that.
Well, what was the purpose of you going to Europe?
Well, there was a particular law that was being debated there that had to do with patent protection in the area of what they call computer-implemented inventions. So, you know, inventions that are run by software or that are software-based was at the center of the debate in Europe. And, you know, ideally, we would start to see sort of similar patent protection around the world instead of a bunch of different systems that we have today. And this particular law was designed to, you know, harmonize a bit of Europe that's now, you know, different in every country.
So this, I completely understand the whole venue here. You went over there to help them to develop a patent protection system that could be used all over EU.
Well, that's right. I mean, that makes me sound very important, but I mean,
well, you are important,
and I appreciate that, Jim. That's why I call in the show, because, you know, it's good for my ego. But I mean, basically, what happened is that you know, Europe wasn't always Europe; it was just a bunch of countries. And before the European Union, there was a treaty called the European Patent Convention, where a bunch of countries signed on to create the European Patent Office. And so now there is something called a European patent, but they're subject to complete interpretation in national courts. So they sort of went halfway, if you will, prior to the EU forming. So the new law was to bring the EPO into the European Union under its jurisdiction and really start to get a Europe-wide kind of patent system going.
So to make the issuing and the enforcement and the protection of these patents under the jurisdiction of the EU, not an individual country.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, the principal purpose for forming the EU was to create an economic superpower.
Right.
But they're having a lot of trouble getting their act together and actually acting as a union. And so, you know, they've set out a lot of economic goals for themselves to accomplish. You know, in a conference in Lisbon, there's something that gets bandied about called the Lisbon Agenda.
Right.
That's about, you know, really trying to build the economy of Europe as a single economy. And this was meant to be a step in that direction, but they're really having a lot of trouble. And people have probably heard about constitutional problems and things like that as well.
Absolutely. But. Yeah, the vote in France
In
the Netherlands, right. By the way, where were you stationed in this activity?
I was mostly in Brussels, and they say the best thing about Brussels.
I don't want to hear about the side trips right now.
No, I'm just saying, they say the best thing about Brussels is its proximity to the rest of Europe.
Ah, I gotcha.
So, and that, you know, it's another typical thing that the seat of government is in Brussels, but one week every month, they pack up their entire offices and move the entire parliament to Strasbourg in France, just to create an efficiency. And I would say that the most remarkable thing about Strasbourg is how difficult it is to get to from the rest of Europe. So it's not always the most efficient system, but So mostly in Brussels, but a week in Strasbourg as well.
What does the, and I'm going to get you started on this, and then we'll take a break. But what does all this mean for owners of intellectual property in America?
Well, I mean, intellectual property is becoming a more and more global concept. I mean, you know, a lot of the patents filed in the United States are non-U.S. companies, and a lot of the patents filed in Europe and Japan are U.S. companies.
Right.
And so more and more you're trying to get, if you have an invention that you're trying to protect, you're trying to get that protection around the world.
Right. And not only an invention, but intellectual property that's not an invention, like content, for example. Quick
that's
break.
Right.
Right back after these messages with our good friend Jonathan Zook. It's 20 till. Stay with us. Here's Mickey and Sylvia to take us out.
Never wanna quit. No, no. After you've had it. You're in an awful fix.
There's Dan Fogelberg.
Tell me a secret. Tell me
from the Innocent Age album.
Tell me the truth.
Here's Jonathan Zook, too. He's got a new album coming out, right, Jonathan?
Yep.
More likely to be a movie, though, right?
It's called IP or Die.
More likely, though, rather than an album, your first creative work is probably going to be more like a movie, right?
That's true. I've actually had a lot of I've joked with a lot of people about putting out like a Christmas CD and sending it around as a Christmas card to people with, you know, singing White Christmas and stuff.
And these are people
know.
Who really love you a lot, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Those are the ones who would actually listen to it, right?
Yeah, well.
But I would definitely.
Your copy will be on the way.
I would definitely go see your movie. So you spent 2 months in Brussels, largely, and a few other places.
That's
and
right.
you were over there. What did you learn about the way the Europeans do business? I mean, you've been doing this for some time, but you probably got a better understanding about these folks in this last 2 months. I would hazard to say that 2 months is the longest time you've spent doing this, right?
In yeah, definitely. Time? I mean, most of the time it's been 1 or 2 weeks, so
yeah.
This has definitely been the longest stay. I had a little apartment and, you know, lived differently and was a little more integrated. And I mean, even so, it wasn't sort of normal operations of setting up an office because it was very campaign-like, you know, like mm-hmm. when you go to work on you know, passing some state law and you go there to, you know, get some initiative passed or something, right? It's that kind of of level of activity, which is a little frenetic and a little artificial in some ways, right? But, I think everybody, every individual has this sort of disconnect between who they are and who they think they are. And we all suffer under that problem, and I think in some ways Europe suffers under it almost as a kind of a cultural issue that, I mean, they believe that, you know, that their patent system can avoid the pitfalls of our patent system and that lobbying...
That's called arrogance, Jonathan.
Well, yes, it is in a way. But, you know, it's a self-perception like, well, we don't have lobbying here the way that you do in the U.S. and things. But,
well, the
but
thing
then
is,
the reality is that there was a lot of aggressive lobbying on the other side,
mm-hmm.
You know, by some of these folks in the free software community and things that, I mean, they were doing really extreme things that I've never seen in the U.S., like putting coffins out in front of the parliament with the names of members of parliament that support patents on, for example. I've never seen anything like
no,
that.
No, I've never have either.
And so, I mean, there was this incredible disconnect between, well, we really don't approve of what they're doing, but we're certainly going to cave to their wishes, right? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a very frustrating experience from that standpoint. And the other thing that's very interesting that's a little bit more technical is that what they expect of legislators is very different there than here. Because here what happens is that Congress passes laws that are very simple in nature, and they're basically a set of principles that are then handed over to the executive branch
mm-hmm.
to turn into real regulation and to turn into, like, you know, the phone book that says, what does this really mean in practice?
They get promulgated, don't they?
Right, they get promulgated, but they also get sort of expanded and made more specific.
Mm-hmm.
So the more sort of technical job actually lies with bureaucrats in the executive branch. Whereas what happens in Europe is that the equivalent of, say, the FTC is going to build this complex law first, and then it goes to Parliament. And so the members of parliament are expected to really delve into the intricacies mm-hmm. of a technology in a way that legislators here are not.
All of their legislators are policy wonks.
Well, I mean, they're expected to be, but they're not, but they don't really know any more than ours, and so it's very hard. I mean, and there's 725 of them, and so trying to get that number of people educated is very difficult. And so, again, what you have here is a situation where there are sort of thought leaders, and you'll have a lot of folks that can't. I mean, nobody can really learn to be a specialist in everything, and so you'll tend to find people that you trust and kind of follow them, and that happens here, and it's reasonable, but it has some pitfalls. But it's even more exaggerated there, that people are literally refusing to learn anything about it because it's so overwhelming, and they'll just follow what the thought leader is saying.
Is this
and that's a dangerous situation?
Is this disconnect, as you call it, and this arrogance, as I call it? Does it prevent them from taking whatever we've accomplished, whatever we've done that actually works? Does it prevent them from actually using our best practices to their benefit?
I think sometimes it does. And the reality is that our patent system kind of fell apart in the 90s. And so
because of lack of funding?
Well, it was lack of funding, and then also it was just overwhelmed. I mean, it was just this.
Right.
The venture capital community really pushed people to patent every idea that got written down on the napkin, right? And so, I mean, it was just like just overwhelming number of patent applications and things. And so the system kind of fell apart. It got like a 4-year pendency, like a 4-year waiting list to get a patent,
right.
And a lot of stupid patents that shouldn't have been awarded were awarded. And so, unfortunately, if you look at that outcome, you can make your own mind up as to what it is that caused it. And I would certainly say that it was at least 75% a product of the times, and that it would never be replicated. The fears
right.
that same problem would occur are unfounded, because we'll never have the 90s again, right?
I think you're right. But did anything that we've learned, has anything that we've learned been able to be useful to the Europeans? Were they accepted at all?
Well, I mean, that's just it. I mean, it's open for interpretation what it is that we learned.
Yeah.
Right, and that's the complexity, because where a lot of Europeans think they think what we learned was that it was a bad idea to patent software inventions,
mm-hmm.
and I would argue that wasn't the bad idea. The bad idea was overwhelming the system and letting the quality degrade across the board.
Stand by, Jonathan. When we come back, I'm going to ask Jonathan if anything that he did over there benefited small businesses. Tintel, stay with us. The Small Business Advocate, and visiting with our good friend Jonathan Zook. And Jonathan is the president of the Association for Competitive Technology. Jonathan, tell us about ACT.
Well, ACT is a trade association made up of small businesses in the information technology
and some industry. Large businesses.
And some large businesses, but really we represent small businesses. I mean, we have some supporters that are large businesses, but our issues and our positions are always wrapped around the interests of small businesses.
Right, and especially small businesses that are developing technology, that are leveraging technology in unique and 21st century ways. And Jonathan,
that's right.
Speaking of all those members that you just talked about, what is all this that you're doing in Europe, in Brussels, working with the EU's? By the way, I'm sorry. Before we go any further, I want you to give us the website, because I want people to have the
sure.
ability to find you.
It's www.actonline.org, actonline.org.
Check it out, folks, and I encourage you to consider joining this organization. Even if you're not a technology developer and inventor, you use technology, and so what Jonathan and his group are doing is important to you and to me. What does all this have to do, how does this benefit small businesses in Europe and in the United States?
Well, a lot of the problem with small businesses and politics is that small businesses become a kind of rhetorical bludgeon in politics. With very little understanding of how they actually operate and what they actually need. And what had happened in Europe is that a bunch of folks from the sort of the free software community, a bunch of guys that had just finished washing dishes at their mother's house, would come out and demonstrate in the square and say that they represented small businesses and that patents were for big businesses and small businesses hate patents. And the irony, of course, is that any of us that have ever been in a small business know that you have trouble getting home for dinner, let alone to Brussels to demonstrate in the square.
Right.
And so it was
well, see, that whole scenario would never happen in the United States.
Well, that's right. I mean,
never mind whether we had time or not. That wouldn't be the way we would think about it.
Well, but that's my point, is that they weren't small businesses.
That happens
here too. I mean, this notion of I represent small businesses. Now, I never talk to them, but I represent them. You know, I mean, it's that kind of a thing that happens in politics all the time, and it really went down a bad path. And so it got painted as a debate between large and small, and the reality is that the real distinction isn't between large and small businesses in most instances. It's between innovators and sort of producers.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is your business one of innovation or creation, or is your business one of production and implementation, right? And you can be an innovative business that's large or small, and if you're a small business, your need for patents is even greater than it is for a big business, because you need it for access to capital. You need it to better compete with a large business to keep them from sort of stealing your idea.
Right.
And you need it for sort of business model flexibility. I mean, if you're a small business, like the guys inventing digital rights management technology right now, right, for protecting movies so they can be downloaded.
Right.
The guys inventing that technology are not the ones setting up movie download services, because those are really big companies, but they're providing an essential core technology to those guys.
And the
so small businesses need these patents even worse than the big businesses if they're innovators, and that's really what we need to change the vocabulary to some extent and allow and keep small business from becoming this generic political bludgeon and really get specific about what kind of contribution these businesses are making to the economy and making sure we protect it.
Right. Well, what do you think is, speaking to American small business owners, what do you think we should be focusing on? What should we be watching in the next year or two? I know you're going to be going back over there. What are some things that we should be paying attention to, those of us who create technology, who create intellectual property, and folks, all of us do? 30 seconds, Jonathan. What should we do?
The bottom line is that, for the American economy to continue to grow, it's going to be through exports. And principally exports of ideas and intellectual property.
Right.
And if that intellectual property isn't protected around the world, that's why we're involved in trade agreements like CAFTA and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. If it's not protected around the world, it's without value, and that economic growth we've enjoyed won't continue.
Right. Jonathan, thank you for being here. Give us the ACT website one more time, please.
www.actonline.org.
That's the Association for Competitive Technology, folks. I encourage you to check out that website. Thanks, Jonathan. Good job today. Thank you for what you're doing over there in Europe for all of us. We'll see you later. Jonathan Zook, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business advocates, small business owners. I'm the small business advocate, and I will be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.